This morning, our reading out of the Old Testament, reading for a sermon, comes to us out of the book of Judges in chapter 7, verses 1 through 22. We've been doing a short series here in the middle of February. Last week, we discussed how it seems like when we're stressed and anxious, trying to figure out a way forward in our life, it can seem like we have just maybe one or two choices, you know, maybe option one, option two, option A or B, left, right, or up or down, and that can be stressful when it feels like we're stuck in kind of that binary decision making. But really, our God calls us to follow, to have that faith and to trust, and really see some of our issues and concerns, you know, through God's eyes, and where another option could open up for us, where we could see things differently and move forward as God would call us to move forward. And today we hear from Gideon, as I share with the children earlier, as a story of, you know, Gideon having trust. It's a little bit of a longer reading, but it helps you kind of cover the understand the whole story of Gideon. If you've watched the VeggieTales version of this story, this is one of my favorite stories of VeggieTales because they have Gideon. It's like Gideon, tuba warrior. And as a tuba player, I just love that interpretation. So if you have that or like to go seek that out, it's worth your time, and it can kind of help you see this story a little differently in a good way as well. So here are these words from the book of Judges, chapter 7, starting at verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the troops that were with him rose early and encamped beside the spring of Herod. And the camp of Midian was north of them, below the hill of Morah in the valley. The Lord said to Gideon, "The troops with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand. Israel would only take the credit away from me, saying, 'My own hand has delivered me.' Now therefore proclaim, 'This is the hearing of the troops. Whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home.' Thus Gideon sifted them out. 22,000 returned and 10,000 remained. Then the Lord said to Gideon, 'The troops are still too many. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them out for you there. When I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. And when I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go.' So he brought the troops down to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'All those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps, you shall put to one side. All those who kneel down to drink, putting their hands to their mouths, you shall put to the other side.' The number of those that lapped was 300, but all the rest of the troops knelt down to drink the water. Then the Lord said to Gideon, 'With the 300 that lapped, I will deliver you and give the Midianites into your hand. Let all the others go to their homes.' So he took the jars of the troops from their hands and their trumpets and sent all the rest of Israel back to their own tents, but retained the 300. The camp of Midian was below him in the valley. That same night, the Lord said to him, 'Get up, attack the camp, for I have given it into your hand. But if you fear to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah, and you shall hear what they say. And afterwards, your hand shall be strengthened to attack the camp.' Then he went down with his servant Purah to the outpost of the armed men that were in the camp. The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley as thick as locusts. And their camels were without number, countless as the sand on the seashore. When Gideon arrived, there was a man telling a dream to his comrade, and he said, 'I had a dream, and in it a cake of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian and came to the tent and struck it so that it fell. It turned upside down, and the tent collapsed.' And his comrade answered, 'This is no other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, a man of Israel, and to his hand God has given Midian and all the army.' When Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped, and he returned to the camp of Israel and said, 'Get up, for the Lord has given the army of Midian into your hand.' After he divided the 300 men into three companies and put trumpets into the hands of all of them and empty jars and torches inside the jars, he said to them, 'Look at me and do the same. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you also blow the trumpets around the whole camp and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch. And they blew the trumpets and smashed the jars that were in their hands. So the three companies blew their trumpets and broke their jars, holding in their left hand the torches and their right hands the trumpets to blow. And they cried, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Every man stood in his place all around the camp, and all the men in camp ran. They cried out and fled. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow and against all the army. And the army fled as far as Bethshitta and towards Zariah, as far as the border of Abel-Meholah by Tabith. The word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. When I think about all the times I've worked on things and I've put time and effort, maybe it's that test I shared with the children earlier, or a project for school, or maybe it's something I've worked on and put a lot of time into, or maybe even when I've gone skiing and I'm feeling really good about how I'm skiing. It never fails for me. I'll hit that point where I find out I am not as awesome as I think that I am, particularly when I'm skiing. Those are the moments that I have lost skis. I have done the whole yard sale on the slope. Because I kid you not, every time about 30 seconds before that moment, I'm thinking, I'm doing pretty good today. And then my day changes right there in that instant. But we think about ourselves and a lot of things that we do. We have these moments. We have these moments where we start thinking that we are pretty awesome, that we've got things in order, that our lives are going great. You know, just everything that we are working on is humming along. But then something happens that changes that. Something comes up. Either we hear of some news, there's a change to that project, something happened with one of our classmates, you name it. What we thought was awesome is now not so much. Now, Gideon would understand this and appreciate this. Gideon was he had built this army up. And this isn't a time period in the history of Israel. This was before the king. This was, you know, actually several generations before David. And they have built this army of 32,000. Now, this was really important for Israel. If you look at a map and kind of see about this time period, so we're looking about 1500 or so BC, Israel was really pretty insignificant looking at it on the map. Not a big empire, didn't have a whole lot of land, but it was located in a spot that people valued, people wanted. Israel there has like a Mediterranean type climate, about like Southern California, and so it's temperate. You can grow things. It's a good place to live. And it's also a good place that if you're launching a campaign from the north to folks in the south, it's a good place to come through. There's ways you can move armies through. If you're going from the south up to the north, the same thing. It was a tumultuous time to live. War was just a part of life. Either somebody was at war with you, or war was happening around you, or someone was planning a war, or somebody just got defeated in a war. And so when Gideon has this army of 32,000, it is a significant accomplishment for Israel to have an army that large. And they see their enemies, the Midianites, and they're thinking, you know, Gideon's thinking, let's take care of this. We won't have to worry about them anymore. We'll be good for a while. But then God starts talking, speaking, proclaiming to them that if you had gone and defeated the Midianites with your army of 32,000, you'd start thinking that you did it on your own, and I was not a part of it. That's a hard reality for Gideon to hear, a hard thing for him to hear, especially as they had put things together to work on this, you know, to build up this army, to go into battle. And as, you know, they're going through, you know, God speaking to Gideon and working this army down, I've wondered what Gideon may have been thinking, you know, in this. You know, he had the 10,000 leave, or the 22,000 leave, stuck with the 10,000. Then he goes to this other test to do the final sort there. And I wonder what Gideon really was thinking here, because he's got all these troops. He's got the ones that are the bravest that are left, the 10,000 that are the bravest. And the Lord has them come down to the water, and those that kneel, you know, go on one side. Those who drink like, you know, dogs go to one side. And Gideon is left with those who drink like dogs. You bring them to the water. Instead of kneeling, as probably I'd like to say I would, but I have been that thirsty where I have been like the 300. And these are the 300 that Gideon is to lead the army to defeat the Midianites with. What trust must God be having, or what Gideon must be having in God at this moment? I don't know about you, but I've done group projects with school before. And some of the folks I've worked with, I've gone, all right, group project, here we go. I wonder if Gideon may have been struggling with this. But Gideon showed that trust, recognizing that God was at work, even with people he would not have initially chosen to go into battle with. And I believe for us in our day and age, this story of trust, of how Gideon was willing to listen to God, how Gideon was willing to put God before his own self, is important in our day and our age, where we can live in an age of self-promotion. And it's, you know, feels good at times to have that pride, to have, you know, that confidence, and that things are going well, that I am awesome. But when we think about that too much, and we go too far, begin to forget how our God is a part of our lives, how our God provides, how our God guides, how our God calls us to trust. This is a story, the end, the circumstances of life, of God asking Gideon and the army to trust. To trust in that deliverance of being free of their enemies and moving forward. We give a lot of service, lip service, I believe, to saying how we trust God. And I say this not terribly pejoratively, but you know, as a people of faith, we like to say that we trust God, that we have our whole faith, that we put everything into our connection with God. And even as a society, I mean, we put this on, you know, our money, and we say this, you know, in God we trust. But the reality is, when we have that moment when we need to trust in God, to trust, you know, in that hope that God has for us, it is a struggle. We can feel like Gideon, who had built up that army of 32,000 and was now with 300. We can feel like we have done everything right. We have built up everything in our lives correctly, and now we are down to nothing. But as a people of faith, our God is with us. Our God calls us to hope, to put our trust into Him. And Gideon demonstrates that trust. Gideon demonstrates that hope of having in God, even though he struggles with it. He had to have that dream, that interpretation of the dream, to move forward. But if we think about this trust as Christians, as followers of Christ, we can see a similar pattern that happened in the life of Christ. Christ at times, you know, struggled with following God, of, you know, especially in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he is, you know, asking God to lift this cup from him and not have to go to the cross. But yet Christ demonstrated that trust. It's demonstrated that trust in God. And through that act of trust, of having his hope, of even through the crucifixion, through being, you know, put there in an awful, terrible place, God showed us, Christ showed us, how there is, you know, life on the other side of that trust. As a people who follow God, who follow Christ especially, I believe we are called to live into this trust, not in a way that just is obvious, but really live into it. We know how things are going to end as a people of faith, as a people of Christ. We know that when we leave this world, we will be with our God. We will have that everlasting life. We will not be experiencing the brokenness of this world anymore. But too often we live as if that is not our reality. We don't fully trust. We don't fully live. We don't fully experience that hope that is with us now. I believe this trust that we're called to place in God, this trust that we can experience, it's not just trust for trust's sake. It is life-giving. It's how we receive grace. It's how we receive that fresh start and new beginning. So brothers and sisters, I encourage us, I call on us to live into that trust, to live into that hope as a people who know the end of the story, to live as Gideon lived when the army was shrinking down in size but was still left with God's presence and a direction for him to work in. I believe this trust that God calls us to place in him is life-giving. It is transformative and is how we can be the people that God calls us to be now and for all of our days. Amen.